If you're passionate about sports and looking for a thrill, you need to check out the freshly redesigned XBet. They're calling it the last sports book you'll ever join. I've been playing on XBet, and they really do have it all. Whether odds on basketball, combat sports, or even betting on the next Bitcoin dip. And the best part is, when you win, you get paid quick. But it's not just about placing bets. XBet is a whole experience. They support athletes and sports shows just like ours, and they give back to the community with tons of free bets and cash prize contests. Did I mention they also have a casino now? Spin the slots, play some roulette, or even try your luck at the live tables, all from a mobile platform that lets you enjoy the fun on the go. Whether you're super into sports betting or curious about trying it out, you need a site that makes it fun and easy. That's why you've got to check out XBet. Sign up today using the promo code TOOLSHED and get a generous bonus of up to $1,000 on your first deposit. That's right, promo code TOOLSHED for free cash bonus to kickstart your journey. With so many great UFC cards on the horizon and the fact that baseball season is in full swing, there's never been a better time to play. Make your next bet, XBet.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 230 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, what's going on, bud?
Oh, man, not much. Just straight back here from a game. So came in, turned on the computer, got on the mic, but it's good for sure. Good week. Kyle Teal's up. He's been incredible. Red Sox fans should be absolutely thrilled about Kyle Teal. Yeah, and we can do a little breakdown of him at some point if you want, but he's been unreal good, like in every aspect of the game.
Would you say that Red Sox fans would be head over teal for? No, that's terrible. It sounded better in my head, like teal heel, but yeah. No, it didn't work that well.
And there's can't steal on teal.
There we go.
Real, right. The real teal. There's some good ones.
The highlight teal. Yeah. There's definitely some potential with that name, but yeah, obviously. Very exciting player. Hopefully I'll get this. I'll probably see him next. I'm sure he's up here at some point next year.
Yeah.
Got to imagine maybe in the midseason or something like that. But very exciting, but no Teal talk today. Again, we'll probably break down Teal in the upcoming episode. But today's episode is all about just recent debuts over the last, 3 weeks or so. both on the hitting side and pitching side of things. And then we'll talk about some guys that we think might be up later on the season, maybe guys that we don't think will be up, just who you should stash, who you shouldn't stash. So we'll get into that in the second half of the show. But before we get into everything, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty prospect and FYPD rankings, plus daily write-ups and much more. All right, let's hop into it, Chris, with the most recent promotion here, with Lawrence Butler getting the call for the Oakland Athletics. He immediately becomes like the third best hitter in that lineup already. But Butler is very intriguing. Like, this guy has consistently put up good power speed numbers in the minor leagues. That's always been his calling card. You know, big athlete, good power. And he's really kind of improved as a pure hitter over the years, especially going into this year. I really trimmed the strikeout rate this year down to 18.9%. For reference, you know, back in 2021, between low A and high A, he was at 32.4%. And in 2022, most of that in high A, he was at 31.9%. So that was the issue with Butler, too much swing and miss. Has definitely improved that. And while maintaining that power speed blend, had 15 home runs and 21 steals in just 89 games this year between AA and AAA. How excited for Lawrence Butler are you, like both in the short term and long term, Chris?
Well, he's made tangible improvements this year, and that's obviously a big sticking point for him. Last year, running a contact rate of 66%, this year, 76%. So that's a major step forward for Lawrence Butler, and the tools are pretty intriguing here. I mean, this is a power speed guy with just, I think, tools across the board. And like you said, he steps into an A's lineup and probably one of the better hitters. He's a big physical dude, just turned 23. And, you know, I don't know if he'll hit the ground running or not. It's still a question mark. He still struggles with breaking balls, like, and he could get exploited with that. So I'll be curious to see how he fares against breaking balls. But I will say the improvements with the contact have been huge this year. They've taken him, you know, to new heights. You look at the K rate drop, as you mentioned, it's dropped, you know, over like 12 percentage points. Like, that's significant.
Yep.
You know, the power's there. He had 15 home runs this year. The stolen bases are there. He's very efficient on the base pass as well. He has 21 stolen bases. And then when you factor in that he's making so much more contact, it's like, okay, like, this guy could be pretty interesting. So I'm pretty excited to see what he does this year, but I'm really excited to see what he develops into long-term, because I do think there's a plus or better power. Like, you look at the frame, you look at the exit velocities, it's all there. And you look at the speed too. Like, he's a really good runner despite that really built athletic frame. And it's just, it's what you want to see in a player. And I just think he's going to be really solid, even if he hits 240. Like, we'll say he hits 240. Like, I think there's going to be enough power speed to make him an interesting fantasy asset. So Lawrence Butler is somebody that I'm highly interested in picking up in, you know, most formats, honestly.
Yeah, no, I am too. The power speed is absolutely there, and he's shown that, and has a swing that is geared for just generating loft. And I'm a big fan. I underranked him last time, and I've adjusted that in my rankings for this upcoming update here in the middle of August. But yeah, I think he's a top 100 caliber prospect, and think a guy that could, you know, easily, you know, flirt with 2020 if the, you know, the gains with the contact and gains with the strikeout rate are legitimate, and if those stick moving forward. Absolutely think he could be a pretty solid fantasy player for sure. And, you know, adding to that, you know, the youth movement there with Soderstrom and Geloff, or like I said, those are probably the three best hitters in their lineup at this point in time. So nice to see them continue to bring up these young guys. And yeah, definitely a good amount of intrigue with Butler, and I think the perceived value hasn't quite caught up. So I think he's still a pretty solid target in dynasty leagues. And same can be said about this guy, who I think everybody is guilty of undervaluing, including myself. I fully admit that. That's Davis Schneider with the Toronto Blue Jays here, and came up and just immediately hit the ground running. 9 hits in his first 5 games with a pair of home runs. This after a very productive season in the upper minors in AAA this year, 87 games, .275, .416, .553, 21 home runs, 9 steals, nearly as many walks as strikeouts, 72 to 86 in those 87 games. And he's been playing some second base for Toronto. You know, a guy that was never really highly thought of as a prospect. You know, he wasn't drafted high, 28th round pick back in 2017 out of high school in New Jersey, and just never really had that buzz surrounding him, but he sure does now. Like, I missed out on him in one dynasty league where he was available in because I adjusted my bid. Chris, have you ever done this? I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
I put a bid in. I think it was $1,000 budget. I think I put in, it was like 320, 325, something like that. And I was like, that's a little high. I could probably get him for less. I drop it to 285. He goes for 296. I was so
the worst.
I was so pissed off at myself. But, you know, I saw a lot of, you know, pretty big fab bids for him. So the buzz is there, at least now. Are you a believer? Are you a believer in Schneider here? Or are you more in the sell high camp given the buzz?
No, I'm not. He did some pretty spectacular things in AAA that really didn't get recognized, I would say. You look at the underlying data, and it just is all really solid. He was one of seven AAA batters with a contact rate north of 75%, barrel rate north of 10%, and an average exit velocity greater than 90. And if I filtered that by chase rate, he had a 20% chase rate in AAA, puts him in like one of like three, pretty elite company with what he did in AAA. And you kind of run down the data a bit. He's patient, but he's aggressive in the zone. So like, he's not chasing very much, clearly, by that 20% chase rate, at an 85% zone contact rate and a 76% contact rate as well. The barrel percent was up at 13%, which is great to see. Average EV of 90 miles an hour and a ninth percentile EV of 104.5 miles an hour. This is a hitter that I think will and can excel. Like, I just really believe in this profile, and I'm pretty in. It's one of those names, again, there's always guys that fly under the radar, and it just feels like that Schneider is one of these. So I'm all about getting some Davis Schneider if you can.
Yeah, I think he's definitely underrated. I mean, he's undersized a bit, but the bat is legit. And like, a lot of these, you know, everything we mentioned, these are tangible things to look into here. Like, the approach has always been great, and even trimmed the K rate this year as well, increased the walk rate too. It was already, you know, high walk rate last year. He's even improved it this year. You know, solid power, not huge power, but, you know, solid power. Can run a little bit too, you know, at 9 steals this year, 17 last year. So he should at least add a little bit there, even if it's just like, you know, 8 to 10 or so over a full season. So, yeah, I think he's sneaky good, and he'll be in a pretty good lineup here. A lot of good hitters hitting in front of him. So, yeah, I think there's some staying power here with Davis Schneider for sure. Keeping it in the American League East, going down to Tampa Bay, Curtis Meade got the call about a week ago or so. He hasn't really done much so far, 4 games, just 1 hit. But, you know, he was really heating up in AAA before his promotion. You know, started the season off a little bit slow, but, again, was really heating up overall. Hit .283 with a .369 OBP in 50 games, 17 doubles, 3 home runs, 3 steals, nearly as many walks as strikeouts. You know, Chris, I don't think anybody like, doubts how good of a pure hitter that Meade is. Like, this is a guy that could hit .280+ at the major league level. But I think there are some questions, whether they're right or wrong, about, you know, where's the power at? You know, is this a 15-homer guy? Is this a 20-plus homer guy? I think that's really the X factor here with Curtis Meade. So, I mean, for me, I think he can get up to 20. Like, I think he could be, you know, what we've seen out of like Jeff McNeil a couple years ago. I think he can get to that range. I mean, is he going to be a stud? No. Could he be just a really good hitter that provides, you know, like top 100 value? I think that's definitely where he could end up long term. So, obviously, I'm in on Meade. I think everyone else should be as well. But where are you at on Curtis Meade?
Well, he hits the ball hard, but ultimately he hasn't really hit it at ideal launch angles this year. If you look at his launch angle, 12 degrees looks pretty good. But this is why I kind of warn against using launch angle without context, because it's inconsistent launch angles to just average out to 12 degrees.
Right.
You look and the standard deviation of launch angle is 31 degrees, which is really high. That means he's got a wide spray, like
he's hitting a lot of ground balls. He's hitting a lot of like infield pop-ups too. So with Meade, like there's no questioning he can hit the ball hard. He's consistently done that. He's put up really good exit velocities, like near 90 mile an hour average this year. Last year, his 90th percentile of 104.5 this year was good considering his injury. And also last year it was higher than that. It was like near 106 last year. And that's in above average to plus power range that you're getting to. And the contact skills are good. But the ultimate question is, you know, does he lift the ball enough to get to that power? Or is he just going to be a guy that ultimately pounds it into the ground? And hopefully that's not the case, because the contact here is incredibly good. The plate discipline, really, really good. Walks as much as he strikes out, makes a lot of contact, like 82% contact and 88% zone contact. Like, those are really good numbers. And there's potential, given the data, for plus power and plus hit. But ultimately, is he going to get to that? And I think that those question marks are legitimate, because we'll have to actually see that materialize in games, him getting to that power more.
So where do you think he ends up at? If you had to, you know, peak Curtis Meade is a blank per year home run hitter.
I feel like 15 safe.
Yep.
But you obviously hope for more. Like, that's not a prospect that I just want to be enamored with, and a prospect that I really loved at the beginning of the year. I don't want that, but ultimately, like, I'd say 15 feels like a good range early on. If he can lift the ball more, I think there's 22 home run pop, but like you said, he's got to lift the ball more. So that'd be the biggest thing with him.
Yeah. And you brought up a good point too, but you know, launch angle not being, you know, a great, you know, doesn't tell you the whole story. That's why I love barrel rate so much, because, you know, barrel rate incorporates, obviously, you know, you have to hit it hard and at the ideal launch angle, because, you know, average exit velo, you know, that doesn't tell you the whole story. Launch angle doesn't tell you the whole story, but barrel rate really does, or at least to a better level. So that's why, you know, I like that better than hard hit rate, because you can hit the ball. Like, we've seen that with guys like, you know, Keep Ryan Hayes is a perfect example of that. You know, Vladdy Jr., like guys that were hitting the ball super hard, but into the ground. So that's why I look at barrel rate first and foremost when it comes to, you know, quality of contact metrics. Moving over to the National League now, Marco Luciano, who's already been up and then back down, but did get a little cup of coffee here with the Giants. And that was actually a move that kind of shocked me a little bit. I didn't think he'd be up this year. Even when there were rumblings of it, I still didn't believe it. But, hey, I was wrong. But he was just brought up for a handful of games, got 11 at-bats, 3 hits, scored a couple of runs, didn't really do too much before he got sent back down. But this is a guy, Chris, that I've always been lower on than most, and I'm still lower on him than most. And the power's there. Absolutely, the power's there over a full year. This could be a 30-homer bat, but, you know, I don't know how much he runs. He started running again a bit this year, 6 steals. But he didn't run at all in 2022. You know, I don't think he's more than a handful steals a year guy. And, you know, the contact just hasn't been great. I mean, he's hitting 231 this year. Doesn't strike out a whole lot. I mean, he doesn't have like a really bad swing and miss issue. But I just don't see him being more than like, you know, 250 hitter, 25 home runs. I mean, he's useful, absolutely. But I still see him ranked so highly on a lot of rankings, and I don't get why he's ranked that highly anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he's still way up there on a lot of like real life list, and that honestly surprises me, because I'm not really sure like what we're hoping at this point. Like, I think he's definitely below average in the field. So the fact that he still ranks rather highly on real life list is,
yeah,
I don't know. It's banking a lot on the bat, and I don't think the hit tool's there. Honestly, we've seen the struggles kind of year over year. The strikeout rates this year were really bad. They ballooned up to 30% in AA and 28% in the smaller stint in AAA. The contact numbers aren't good. I mean, he's a sub 70% contact, and that's obviously not ideal. Like, that's certainly below average. You look at minor league average being like 72.5-ish. So that's, you know, below average there, chasing it like a 30% clip. Sure, he can hit the ball hard, but it only means so much when you strike out as much as you do and make contact at the rate that he does. So my concern with Luciano is that he's not going to hit enough. Yeah, he's still young. He's 21. It was a bit of an aggressive promotion, I will say. But at the end of the day, like, I'm just not really in on Marco Luciano anymore. Especially, I just have such a sour taste in my mouth from when we saw him live in the AFL. He just looked lazy. He was loafing, like not running anything out. Like, that just left such a bad impression in my mind as somebody that just didn't really care. And I get, like, it's just, he was AFL. Like, some players don't want to be there. I get it. But still, like, I don't know. I don't love seeing that by any means. And the way players handle themselves on the field,
yep.
I don't know. It just left a bad taste in my mouth with Marco Luciano. And then you back it with the fact that the performance has not been good. I'm just not in.
Yeah, no, I'm not either. And it's, I'm not fully out, but the perceived value is just way too high on him. And yeah, when we saw him out in the AFL, I mean, some players just don't want to be there. And other players have had like a long season where they're just getting more work in. But Luciano was there after a year where he only played 65 games. He missed some time due to injury. So it wasn't like he was coming off a year where he played 120, 130 games or anything like that. He, again, played 65 games, you know, a little under half of a minor league season. So that's, was very underwhelmed when we saw him out there. Try not to like influence my rankings too much with that, but this hasn't been a lot. Like I said, the power, the power's good, but that's really about it right now. Like, what's the difference? I mean, at this point, he's kind of actually similar to like Aurelvis Martinez. Who do you like more between him and Aurelvis at this point? I feel like I've just been describing Aurelvis for the last 5 minutes here as well.
I like Aurelvis better at this point. He's making more contact. His contact's trending upward, and Luciano's is trending downward. So, like, at this point, like, give me Aurelvis Martinez. I don't know. I mean, I just feel like at this point, he's shown more. That's crazy to say because I was definitely not in that camp. But
right, and that I'm even with the, in agreement with you there that he has shown more. And obviously, I've been one of the biggest Aurelvis kind of doubters for a while now, and I'm still lower on him than most people are. But yeah, he's absolutely shown more than Luciano has this year. And that's the thing. I think the perceived value on each of these guys, like, I think it's still considerably higher for Luciano as opposed to Aurelvis, at least in the perceived value. So yeah, I think Luciano is definitely a sell for me right now. And yeah, I don't have any shares of him, and I don't envision that changing anytime soon. But somebody that has impressed, for like, without a question, is Sal Frelick up there in Milwaukee, who's really, and he's not really getting a lot of love either, but he's hitting 260 through his first 50 at bats, 18 games, and 68 plate appearances, 4 doubles, 3 home runs, and a steal, more walks and strikeouts, 14 walks to just 12 strikeouts, 412 OBP, and a 520 slug for Mr. Sal Frelick. And, you know, just another, you know, it's like an outfield factory there in Milwaukee. And obviously you've got a couple more on the way, including Jackson Churio. But I think Frelick is going to be one of those guys, Chris, that always is underrated because he doesn't have big power, doesn't have, you know, much power at all in general. But he's running a 7.3% barrel rate right now. Like, he's not a zero power guy. This is a guy that I think could be like 10, 12, maybe 15 home runs at peak. He's a good runner, and he's always shown a great approach and great contact skills, and he's already showing all of those skills right now. He has a near 90% zone contact rate, better than league average whiff and chase rates. So he's already showing that all those skills while hitting a couple home runs here and there. I think he's sneaky good.
Yeah, I agree. And he's never going to be someone that hits the ball very hard. Like, we know that the data all backs that, like, the exit velocities are going to be below average, but I do think there is a case for him to be able to ultimately get to the kind of pull power that he needs to be serviceable in the home run department.
Yeah.
I've seen 3 this year in 68 plate appearances. So pretty solid. And when you make the amount of contact he does, it's only going to play up. So, you know, it's below average power, but it does play up a hair when you make as much contact as Sal Frelick does and you hit the ball at ideal launch angles, as we've talked about. And that's kind of what he does. He's making the most of what he brings to the table. So the concern I have with Frelick is just against breaking balls. He's getting really exploited there. And I'm looking to see if that was also the case in AAA, because he's just hitting 077 against breakers right now. Again, small sample, but 28% whiff rate. He did struggle a bit with breakers, but if his struggle against breakers is making contact 81% of the time, I think we'll be all right. So he's elite contact. I mean, he made in the minors, he made contact against fastballs 94% of the time. Swinging strike rate of 3.3%. That's just absurdly good. And Frelick is solid in the field too. So, you know, I like this profile ultimately. It's going to be interesting to see, like, what does it look like for fantasy? And that's kind of, you know, where my questions are. So I'm definitely in on Sal Frelick. And I think you're right. The cost is low enough. Like, it feels like people haven't fully bought in yet. So from that standpoint, I do think he's a good buy.
I've been trying to think of like a player comparison for Frelick, and I don't have a great one. Closest one I've come to so far, but more so in the power speed department. I think like power speed, he could be like a Tommy Edman type, where it's like, you know, 11, 12, 13 home runs, you know, 30-ish steals, but he's obviously a much better contact hitter than Edman is. I can't find a great comp for him, but I think he's going to be sneaky good and always get undervalued due to just not having a ton of power. And then that's, you know, that's usually how it is with these types of guys. But a couple more outfielders here up in Seattle. Cade Marlowe is the one that got the call recently. And obviously they acquired Dominic Canzone at the deadline as well, and they've been giving him some time. But Marlowe, in a, you know, obviously very small sample size so far, has been performing pretty well in 46 plate appearances, hitting 308, 413, 564, pair of home runs, pair of steals, you know, showing a good approach so far, 15.2% walk rate, 19.6% K rate. Always had a pretty good power speed blend in the minor leagues, but this is a guy that's been kind of all over the place with rankings. So, Chris, where are you at on Cade Marlowe? Are you intrigued by the profile? Is this a guy you'd be, you know, looking to invest in long-term in dynasty leagues?
He's interesting. You know, I go back and forth on how I ultimately feel about him.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, because he's older, but the data's fairly good. Like, he hits the ball hard enough to make an impact. He does it with pretty decent zone contact, at least. You know, you're looking in the minors at an 84% zone contact and a 25% chase and a good barrel rate, too. Like, he's hitting the ball at ideal launch angles, 11% barrel. So you love to see that. Where does the playing time fit, I guess, is my question. So you look at this lineup, and I just struggle to see, like, Marlowe being more than a platoon bat.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong on this, but I do have some questions about where his playing time will be. But I do like the profile. I will say that. I think it's a solid profile that in the right org could really thrive. And not, this is not a knock on Seattle. It's just that they're quite loaded. I mean, they've got Julio Rodriguez in center, obviously. You've got Teoscar out in right field. They're DHing Canzone some. He's playing in the outfield some. It's a variety there that we're seeing. Marlowe is getting some reps. It's kind of like a 2 to 3 time a week type thing. But again, like, you know, I just want to see him get an everyday crack and see where it goes, because I do think there's potential for him to be a little below average, like everyday regular, and he would have some use for fantasy, but we're going to have to see him get everyday chances to actually see what it can materialize to ultimately.
Yeah. And the playing time is what I was kind of looking at as well. And Hernandez is actually a free agent after this year. So you got to wonder if they just kind of let him go via free agency. We'll kind of see though. He's kind of had an up and down year, you know, hitting 244 right now. So I can see them letting him go with all this, these young outfielders they have. And obviously J-Rod's locked in, but, you know, Kelnick will be back at some points, you know, so next year you figure Teoscar's, J-Rod's obviously in there, probably Kelnick. And then we're looking at maybe a battle between Canzone and Marleau for this, you know, this last outfield spot. So kind of see how each of these guys plays over the rest of the season. And one thing I just found out too, Teoscar Hernandez's nickname, or one of his nicknames, is Mr. Seeds. That is a great nickname.
Never heard that one before.
I never have either until I went to his baseball reference. But I was trying to see where his contract was. But yeah, Teoscar's nickname is Mr. Seeds, which is great. Probably a story behind that. But yeah, you know, in general, I like Marleau. Like, this is a guy, again, he's always had a lot of home runs, a lot of steals in the minor leagues. Like, you look back, he went 26-24 in 100 games back in 2021. He went 23-42 last year in 133 games. And this year was at 11-25 in just 69 games before getting the call. But obviously the average has kind of fluctuated. You know, walks a decent clip, so I think maybe be a little more valuable in OBP formats than average formats. But just got to see where the playing time's at and if he's a full-time major league player between him and Canzone. I like Canzone a good bit too. I think he's pretty undervalued too. So I guess I'm more in than out on Marleau, but I just want to see where the playing time is at here moving forward. A few pitchers here, and we'll go with the most recent one, Emerson Hancock, who he's a different pitcher now than he was when he was at Georgia and when he was, you know, when he was drafted initially. He's more sinker cutter, which I have a newer pitch for him, and that, you know, the changeup is stuck, but doesn't really throw a lot of sliders anymore. He's basically got rid of the curveball, which is probably a good decision there. But, you know, I saw you tweet out, Chris, about how, you know, the numbers this year would look a lot better if you took out a handful of those blow-up starts. But where are you at on him long-term, though? Because, you know, I was a guy that used to be pretty high on Hancock. Like, he was actually the guy I was highest on between him, Lacy, and Max Meyer. And obviously Lacy has completely fallen off a cliff. Yeah. Meyer still probably could be good, obviously coming back from injury. We'll see. But, you know, Hancock has just been, you know, he's been okay throughout his minor league career. Doesn't really stand out, not bad. But I'm kind of feeling like number four starter long term. You think that's fair, Chris?
I'd even say probably number five, if I'm
being
honest. I'm just not sure that, you know, while the numbers would look much better, as I mentioned, I'll pull up exactly what those are. I'm just curious, like, what kind of swing and miss stuff he gets to.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, are the secondaries good enough to ultimately, you know, take him to the next level? And you mentioned it. I mean, sinker, cutter, change. And that's pretty much all he threw in his debut start. But he mixes in a slider sometimes. Like, sinker is obviously going to be a pitch to contact more type pitch. Still not up in the zone, which I don't like at all. You know, cutter can be interesting if it, you know, differentiates itself from the slider. So it's something to watch for as he continues progressing and pitching. But let me find the numbers exactly, because he's had some terrible starts this year, like 2 9 earned run starts, and it's really ballooned everything. So yes, he's had four different starts that were just incredibly bad. He had a 1.2 inning start, 9 earned runs, 4 innings, 7 earned runs, 3 innings, 9 earned, 2 innings, 6 earned runs. So without those, that would be 16 starts, 87 innings, and a 1.76 ERA. That's pretty good. I'm looking at the tweet. I'm surprised it just like didn't get any traction. He had like 6 likes, a side point, but I don't know. Like you said, the stuff and the command comes and goes. He certainly was better at Georgia, in my opinion. I don't know. I like him. I don't love him. I hope that he can continue to develop, because, you know, I am intrigued if the slider can develop into the pitch you want, and if he can throw the changeup more and more effectively, because the changeup, you know, at one point was a plus pitch as well. So, you know, there's a lot of variables here with Emerson Hancock, and ultimately I feel like I'm just rambling at this point, but, you know, he's somebody that I'm semi interested in, but I think he's a back end starter.
Yeah, no, he absolutely is a back-end starter for me as well. And he's a guy that I just wonder if we just went too high on him in FYPDs, like in fantasy-focused rankings, because like that one great year he had at Georgia, 2019 season, second to last year, obviously shortened 2020 season. He only had four starts that year before the draft. But he had a 199 ERA that year. That's kind of vaulted him up to being, you know, one of the top names for the 2020 draft. Even that year, which was a great year, but in terms of the swing and miss stuff, his K rate that year was 28.5%, which is, you know, it's decent enough, but you figure he's never been like the elite swing and miss stuff. He's never really had that. You know, as you mentioned, the changeup was good. You know, the slider and slider used to be pretty good. He's kind of ditched that for the cutter at this point. Fastball command kind of went by the wayside a little bit from 2019 to 2020, his final year at Georgia, and hasn't really ever come back to that level. So I think he's a solid back end starter. I kind of, you know, think of him as I think of like a Matt Manning or someone like that, where it's like, yeah, maybe they're a back end top 100 pitcher or something like that, or depending on league depth, maybe a guy you stream in redraft or something like that. But I don't see like a ton of upside here moving forward. And I almost can group these next two guys, Chris, in with Hancock, because I kind of feel like I'm describing them in different ways. But Lyon Richardson from Cincinnati made his debut a couple of days back, and Quinn Priester has made five starts now and not looked really that impressive at all. He's a guy that you and I both saw. I guess out of these three, if you had to pick one to hitch your wagon to long-term between Richardson, Hancock, and Priester, who would it be?
I mean, I'm a little more confident that Hancock will at least be a starter long-term, but I do really like what Lyon Richardson brings to the table. So if he can work things out, then I think there's a chance that he could be at least a mid-rotation guy, because his stuff is actually a lot better than Hancock's. But Hancock just has a safer floor to be a starter. So Richardson is interesting. Yeah, he is one who had Tommy John. We didn't see him pitch for a while. He pitched in 2021, and then we didn't see him all of 2022. And he came back, and he was actually eligible to be on the – he needed to be added to the 40-man, and they did add him to the 40-man this offseason, which was pretty telling in my opinion. They're like, okay, like, we really believe in this guy. So hadn't seen him pitch, coming off Tommy John, and the Reds add him to the 40-man this offseason. And, you know, the start was whatever, but, you know, his stuff has looked really, really good. It's a big fastball, and one that I think you could potentially bank on being a decent pitch, you know, sitting 97 on average this year, which is pretty encouraging there. And it comes with some good secondaries too. Like you watch him pitch and he's pretty intriguing, like with just everything he brings to the table. So he is still building back up from TJ, but I think there's still questions like, will he throw enough strikes to be a viable starter? And, you know, I don't know. Like, that's something to watch for sure. In his couple AAA starts, yeah, he did throw enough strikes. Like, he was certainly up there in the strike range that you want to see. Like, 67% is like a really good strike rate. And the secondaries look good. Like, you see a changeup, a curve, he's throwing. What he did in his first start kind of mirrors who he's been, like, from a Arsenal standpoint, at least, throughout the minor leagues. Change up, you know, fastball, change up, curve, mix in a slider occasionally. So, yeah, I like Richardson a decent bit. And I think that he's one that at least you should keep an eye on, because the stuff is really good here in this profile. And, yeah, I was looking back, and this was my concern, because it's progressively gotten better. But the strike rate for the season in the minors was 62%. And that's not ideal. I mean, it's livable. It's not ideal. It's gotten better. And I kind of attribute that to just, you know, him pitching more. And so you look and it's kind of the strike rate's ticked up like throughout the year. So just something to monitor. I do like Lyon Richardson's stuff at least. And I could see him being a pretty decent arm.
Yeah, I think upside goes to Richardson, floor to Hancock, and overall, I mean, I don't even know who I'd pick between these three. I mean, I think I lean ever so slightly to Hancock, but overall, I don't see myself investing heavily or even at all in either of these three arms. Like Priester is a guy I've seen live, both in AA and we saw him out in the AFL. He's always just underwhelmed me. I never understood why he was bumped so high. He's been very mediocre at major league level, 8.75 ERA through his first five starts. And obviously he's not going to be that bad, but I don't really trust. Like, do you trust Pittsburgh's pitching development, Chris?
Not really, but I'm hoping they don't screw up Paul Skenes. I'm hoping that's one you just say, get out of the way and let him do his thing. But yeah, I've never been a big Priester guy. I kind of describe him as like he's constantly like tinkering with the arsenal, and like doing new things, but it's not really working per se. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I like the curveball. I like that he does throw five pitches, but it's kind of just okay. Like, you know, he may be a back end starter, but I'd rather have Hancock. Like, if I'm ranking the three, I'll definitely have Hancock over him.
Yeah. I think if I had to rank the three, I'd probably go Hancock, Richardson, Priester. I'm just very underwhelmed with Priester. Kind of reminds me of like Matt Manning. Manning was always seemed to be tinkering with stuff. And I think I like Manning a little bit more than Priester. Yeah. I'm pretty out on Quinn Priester at this point. All right. Those are all the recent notable debuts. Let's go over to the kind of the other side of this whole conversation and who might be up later on this season, whether it's, you know, next week and, you know, early September, or maybe guys that won't be up. And I do an article on this every week over at RotoBaller on Tuesdays, and my rankings this week here, and I'll throw these out there, my top 10, and then get your thoughts, Chris, and we'll throw some names here as we go along. My top 10 was Mason Winn, Colt Keith, Matt Mervis, Don Rafaela, Pete Crow Armstrong, the always blocked Michael Bush, who maybe that's probably a bit high given the fact that they don't want to play him, Heston Kierstad, Kobe Mayo, Ronnie Mauricio, and Kyle Manzardo, but both Mauricio and Manzardo kind of trending down in those rankings here. Do you agree with Winn at one? Like, if there's one guy for you to stash for the rest of the year that, you know, that will be up and provide some impact, who would that be?
Yeah, I think Mason Winn feels like the most, I'll say most obvious, but you kind of get my point of like, I do believe that he will get a crack. Like, why would he not? He's doing everything that you want to see. He just needs a chance. So, yeah, I mean, Winn has made some major improvements, and this may say sound completely like outlandish, but I don't really see much of a difference in him and Jordan Lawler at this point, like, to be honest with you. Like, from a bat standpoint, too, like, Wynn's seen some increases in his power this year. The EVs have really ticked up. And Winn's a plus runner. I know he's only stolen 17 bases. Lawler's stolen a lot more, but the impact with the bat, and Winn has equal speed and the contact skills are really good. Like, I don't know. I really think Mason Wynn's a dude, and I've put him back in the top 15. Like, I was down on him a bit, but the changes that he's made this year are really incredible. And I'm way in on him.
Yeah, I don't quite have him that high. Let's see, where do I have him? I have him at 27, so like terribly lower, but he's a guy too that has been one of the biggest like fluctuating players in my rankings. It's like as his power has come and gone, so has his ranking right now. And yeah, the power, he's definitely showing a lot more power of late, and obviously, you know, not running as much lately. I think he needs like five steals over the last 2 months after stealing more earlier in the season. But yeah, I think that he's definitely going to be up at some point. I heard, you know, a rumbling that they might want to wait and do the whole, like, you know, Corbin Carroll, Gunnar Henderson thing and wait till they can keep his eligibility for next year. So that means he's probably up, you know, 3 weeks or so. But I think there's a solid fantasy upside to be had here, even right away. And, you know, they kind of not paved the way with getting rid of Paul DeJong, but definitely an easier path to playing time. Obviously, Donovan's out for the year as well. So it's not like he's blocked like a lot of these other guys that we might talk about are. So, yeah, I think Winn is definitely the number one guy. He moved in the number one spot this past week for me, and I think he's going to hold Pat there until he gets the call over the next few weeks. What about like a guy like Colt Keith? You see Colt Keith up this year, Chris?
I don't know. I'm not sure they push him. It's possible he gets some work at the, you know, end of the year just to see. He's been fine in AAA. He hasn't been as dominant as he was in double, but still been pretty solid. I don't know. I'm kind of 50-50 on whether he does come up or not. But right now I'd kind of lean and say no, not at least not enough to make a fantasy impact, but I could be wrong there.
So after Wynn, who would be like the next guy? Like, who's like your number two guy for you to stash right now?
That's a good question. We've had so many call-ups, and it's like really, let's say, depleted the field. But if I'm stashing somebody, like with who's left, I almost want to just shoot for upside and like look for, like, just hope that like a Jackson Churio gets a call. Like, that's the kind of player you want to bet on if you're stashing this point. I'll say, I mean, I'm not sure this happens or not. Like, you know, you look at the top of like fantasy prospect rankings and, you know, I don't know. I mean, Caminero, I would say no. Holiday, yeah. I don't see it. Wood, James Wood, no. But Jackson Churio, I think, has a outside chance that they might just send him from Double A Biloxi up to the majors. Would be pretty wild if they did, but I'm not really now. That's kind of stash, like, have if I'm stashing somebody like outside of like Mason Wynn, because everybody else is just kind of like okay. I mean, like Kobe Mayo, like, but where do those guys play? Like, Baltimore's loaded, right, and doesn't really have a spot. So that's my concern with those guys. Like, yeah, they could come up, but they may not play every day. So I don't know. I kind of just want to swing for the fences and take a shot on Jackson Churio, who has been like otherworldly good since the Tacky Ball left the Southern League, which is no surprise. Like, it was kind of something I was hanging my hat on to potentially happen. Like, this would happen, like, you know, and we saw it affect hitters for sure. Like, he was struggling against changeups, and changeup spins were like really high, like with the Tacky Ball. So not surprising to see him just taking off. He's hit 390 since the Tacky Ball left with a 450 OBP and a 660 slug. That's over 111 plate appearances, and he has 6 home runs and 9 stolen bases over that span. So Churio's been the hottest hitter in the minors, arguably, and I could see him, you know, just getting a crack at it, just maybe.
Give me a percent chance. Let's say over under 25% chance.
I'll go over 25, but under 50.
Okay, so like 30 to 40 range. Something, yeah, like
that's fair.
Okay, yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's a chance we see him. And yeah, at this point, it's like a mix of either, yeah, shoot, like if you're in a good spot in the standings and can afford to do so, shoot for the moon, or, you know, maybe it's a lot of these kind of under the radar guys, the Davis Schneider types, and
yeah,
and another Toronto guy that's raking, doesn't have huge power, but Spencer Horowitz has like over a 500 OBP since I think June 1st or something like that. So he's been absolutely raking lately as well. Kind of these under the radar types. And yes, I don't know. Like, where do we see Mayo? Do we see, you know, Mauricio maybe? I mean, Brett Beatty demoted recently, and Mauricio has gotten a little bit of time at third base recently. This is actually going to be a thing. I don't know. It's not like Mauricio is exactly tearing the cover off the ball like he was earlier in the year. You look at since June 1st, he's saying 232 with a sub 300 OBP. So I don't know if maybe he does get caught up. Is he even impactful for fantasy? I don't know. It's a lot of question marks we get to this point in the year, and especially after all the big names that we've already seen get the call. I mean, Rafaela, there's not really a spot for him right now, even though he's been absolutely just destroying the ball in AAA. Same thing with PCA. I don't know if we see him this year. Maybe Michael Bush, they're never going to, you know, give him a full-time shot. It'll be like 2026 before that happens or something like that. You know, Kierstad, again, no spot for him either. Banzardo's hurt. You know, Connor Norby, and then we're getting down to like Connor Norby and Everson Pereira and, you know, Troy Johnston, Joey Ortiz, guys like that. So, I don't know. Anybody else you're kind of looking at, Chris, that you have your eye on?
I mean, the Orioles guy should be getting calls, like Joey Ortiz. I mean, he's been incredible, and Kobe Mayo and Heston Kerstad, but like you said, it's just they've been playing so good. Like, I'm not sure they want to mix up, and they may get the call when rosters expand. Like, I'm not ruling that out, but right. I do feel like that the playing time is just going to be so limited that it may not be worth, you know, going all out for them. It's, I don't know, like Adam Frazier has been surprisingly good. Like, he's been a pleasant surprise this year.
I love that whenever Frazier does anything like good, they're like, yeah, it's, he's surprisingly good. So yeah. I've said that myself too. It's like Frazier's always just hanging on by a thread.
Yeah.
And he always will, I swear. He's always gonna be is hanging on by a thread on a major league roster somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, Colton Cowser's playing twice a week right now, so.
And he's not and he hasn't been good since he got called up. And like Westbrook's been all right. I think Westbrook's been fine. Maybe not quite as good as people thought, but he's been fine. But yeah, I don't know where a lot of these guys play. Maybe we see like Matty Murphys get brought back up to Chicago. I don't know. There's just not a lot of clear opportunities, and you know, in the combination of either opportunity plus potential impact is, you know, not super high on a lot of these guys, and especially not compared to the guys that we already had get called up, but you know, the McLeans, the Westbergs, the Encarnacion Strands, guys like that. So yeah, I think that's pretty much it for guys. And again, if you have a spot you want to try to go out there and get Churio and keep your fingers crossed that he gets called up, I'm not opposed to that. But outside of that, it's just kind of wait and see for stuff to open up. But I think that's going to wrap up today's show, though. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter at EricRoss04, at RotoClegg, at ToolshedPod, and check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com for more work from each of us. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.